welcome to the interview from Neos Cosmos of Magdalena Simonis, a Greek-speaking general practitioner. Dr. Simonis has an extraordinary history. She's a government health advisor, senior honorary research fellow with Safer Families Center for Research and Excellence, a leading women's health expert and advocate. Recent appointments include the National Cervical Cancer Elimination Strategy Expert Advisor Group, the National Endometriosis Expert Advisor Group, and director of the Melbourne Teaching Health Clinic with the School of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences at the University of Melbourne. She is the president of the Australian Federation of Medical Women, co-chair of Medical Women's International Association Scientific and Research Subcommittee, and a leading advocate for health of women, men, mental health, and a leading advocate for GPs. Welcome to the program, Magdalena Simonis.
Thank you, Ford. It's my pleasure to join you here today.
Before we start, tell us a little about who Dr. Magdalena Simonis is.
Well, I'm a general practitioner. I was born in Australia. My mother was from Thessaloniki, my father from Chalkidiki. And I knew I wanted to be a doctor from when I was 7 years of age. So I was one of the lucky ones, really, because I think knowing what you want from early on in life is a pretty good, you know, it's your North Star. And I just followed it. And I can honestly say that it's been the most rewarding fulfilling profession and career that I could have ever dreamed of.
One of the areas that you really focus on is women's health. And we've been through COVID, and I don't want to over-focus on COVID, but you talk about women's health. What specifically are you talking about when you're talking about women's health and COVID? What impacts have you seen?
Mm-hmm. Well, during COVID, what we've experienced is a certain increase in conditions that we've observed that have not been diagnosed. For instance, cancers such as breast cancer. We've had 36% fewer diagnoses of cancer nationally for the period between April and September of 2020. We're still seeing the aftermath of that, and a large proportion of that, those are breast cancer diagnoses. So it means that when they're finally diagnosed, they're much later and more advanced. We've also had a tremendous spike in family violence. Mm. So the family violence services have been inundated, and especially in states such as in Victoria, where we've had such protracted lockdowns. And in the culturally and linguistically diverse communities where, you know, people live in very small apartments often and multi-generational households where family violence escape. It's very difficult to escape that sort of situation, and where they may well be living with in-laws and therefore have no support and no access to their other community. So family violence. There have been issues with accessing medication, and in particular oral contraceptives and a variety of contraceptives have not been arriving in Australia due to issues of supply. Wow. And the same stands for menopausal hormone therapy. So there has been we have had situations where women have not been able to access their hormone replacement therapy for up to 10 months or a year. And this is not only novel in Australia, but it's actually quite a novel experience for the world. The same has been said for larger countries such as the UK.
So what you're saying is our overwhelming focus, a necessary focus on trying to control COVID and the lockdowns, all very necessary, have created other effects, and including supply chain issues, which have impacted on secondary issues, cancers,
contraception, finding
things out, menopausal and domestic violence. I mean, as a Greek Australian, and I'll go to that in a minute, as a Greek Australian, do you think that some of that's resonated within the Greek community as well? Have you seen some of those issues in the Greek community?
Well, the Greek community is not exclusive on its own. Mm. It's part of the broader community. And what we witness, we can't single out any one ethnic group more than any other, but it is basically exposed to the same risks and the same issues. And yes, it is prevalent within our own community. So we do need to have these conversations in the wider community around the need to share that information with someone who is either your GP or a close family friend or a trusted other that can lead you to the necessary services. Now, we do have, although our services are currently being overwhelmed, there's a huge investment both federally and at state level to support our family violence services, such as Safe Steps, and also 1-800-RESPECT. And they are accessible from telephone or online. There's also an excellent website, which I think very few people are aware of, and it's called Head to Health. And it is a government website. And on that website, it has anything and everything you need to know about mental health support. Mm. So whether you have an anxiety disorder, whether or not you have depression, whether you live with someone who has a mental health disorder or even an addiction to drug or alcohol, then this Head to Health website, it's excellent. And it's a resource that very few people know about, but I can highly recommend it.
So in the case, for example, in our community or any other community, going to a GP is a critical step, isn't it? If they trust their GP and, say, Greek Australian doctor like yourself and others as a gateway to these services. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the big roles that GPs play in the community is that we are a source of information. Mm. So at every encounter that an individual has with their GP, my belief is that the individual should leave that room or that session better informed and educated and empowered to make decisions for themselves and their loved ones. So what they learn from their GP can often be transmitted to others, and it should be in language that they understand, and it should be also in ways that they can repeat and replicate for others.
Without giving us any information about your patients or the communities you've dealt with, as a Greek Australian, and I say that only because we're a Greek Australian newspaper and I'm aware that these issues are across the board for all multicultural communities, is there something particularly that you've noticed in that period? Because we know, we've understood as a media outlet, there are maybe a small number but a vocal number of Greeks that are sceptical of COVID, sceptical of vaccines. Mm-hmm. What would you say to them? What do you think? First of all, what do you think the critical issues are that come to you about that, and how do we meet some of those challenges?
I think one of the big issues has been that the communication between Australian Greeks and Greeks has been very strong through Facebook and through other forms of communication. So misinformation is transmitted from one nation to another and from one community to another, so that our messages here are very culture-specific to a large extent. They've been really focused on the broad, you know, Anglo-Celtic, Anglo-Saxon population, and we have cultural differences in many ways in the way that we communicate, in the way that we integrate our suspicions and questions regarding government and its trustworthiness and the messages that we're getting from government. And given that we've been in an environment where the messaging has changed, so let's not blame the community that much, the messaging has changed repeatedly. And often there has been, as a consequence of that, a loss of trust. So when there's a loss of trust, where do you go? You go online and you ask what's happening in your country, what's happening in your environment, and that's where a lot of the misinformation has been shared.
You also get word of mouth and hearsay and a whole range of other things.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting, we were coming up together. I noted something, had an interesting discussion with a colleague who pointed out through some research that, for example, talking about Anglo-Celtic type communication, when our chief health officer would appear in a very casualised way, trying to endear himself in a very casual middle-class way, a lot of multicultural communities saw that as unprofessional, or they wanted the white coat. Is that true? Do you think that resonates at all, or is that just an assumption in some ways?
I think it's a very true perception, and I think that you've hit the nail on the head, and I think that that is why pharmacists wear white coats, chiropractors wear white coats and yet they're not doctors, and naturopaths wear white coats, because that is a symbol of professionalism. Now, when doctors don't wear the white coats and they stand up there and speak as if they are doctors, they become less plausible.
That's interesting. I find – let me just go back a moment. You are also – I have to note, and we've talked about your CV, but you're a notable advocate and you're an advocate for environment and health. You're an advocate for mental health. And also, as someone who's the chair of the Australian Federation or president of the Australian Federation of Medical Women, you actually have a strong focus on men as well and their engagement with mental health and the preconception of health checks. What do you mean by the preconception of health checks? What are we talking about here with men?
So when you, as a couple or as a family, decide to have another child, the onus has often been, well, perceived to be a female-only issue and female-only responsibility. But we know that it takes two gametes to make a zygote and an embryo and a baby. So you need both a male component and the female component. And there are health factors for each of those individuals that can be promoted and that can aid the conception process. And also, as a consequence of that, what we understand now more and more is the significance of epigenetics. So it's not just the genetic material that you inherit, but it's also the environmental factors and how they might affect your own reproductive system, and how that is transmitted through pregnancy to the offspring.
When you say environmental factors, what are we talking about? You're talking about social, environmental, or actual physiologically environmental factors that may impact and work?
Both. Oh. And that includes alcohol intake, drugs of addiction, toxins and chemicals that we ingest that we are exposed to without even giving any consideration to, but we're learning more and more about smoking, certainly exercise. Underlying disease conditions also, such as diabetes. And then we also have the issue of obesity and morbid obesity and what that does to that to the epigenetics of a baby. Yep.
These epigenetic issues have been talked about, well, I'll shift you back to COVID for a minute, throughout the period of the last 2 years about underlying conditions. And we hear sometimes, particularly from more sceptical people, you know, we talk about death rates and all that. So, well, there has been underlying conditions. Mm-hmm. Is that something which has been overstated? Because all of us, to some degree, have some underlying conditions, if it's environmental, as you say. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think that what you've touched there is actually the gap that allows for certain people who are otherwise perfectly healthy to become very seriously unwell. So there are those little gaps in our own immune system, which can sometimes fail us and be targeted by a very clever virus or by a series of events that sort of, you know, create an environment for a disastrous outcome. But by and large, it is people with chronic disease and it is the aged population. We've known this for many conditions, which is why over the age of 65, it has always been part of the regimen for vaccination, which has been provided for free for pneumonia, for the flu, and also the emphasis now is also on shingles vaccine. So now it's free for over 70s, but certainly anywhere over the age of 60 or 65, we recommend it. Because your own immune system, the antibodies that you've produced over the years, let's say to anything, that your ability to produce antibodies to infection actually declines with age. So you are more exposed. You're more vulnerable to a more severe form of the disease.
Let me take you again to that vulnerability factor or the effects of COVID. It was interesting before we started this, I said that I had COVID after 2 years of being very careful and triple vaxxed. The effects were quite mild, and yet I've known others who are also triple vaxxed, and their effects, the effects of COVID were quite serious. I mean, they didn't go to hospital. Why do we have that variability between people who seem to be similar? I'm talking about my peers, similar age, and I'll hear, well, I was triple vaxxed and I was very sick for 7 days. Mm. I was triple vaxxed myself and I wasn't very sick. So why do we have that variability?
Okay, well, if you were triple vaxxed in November and you were exposed in May, then you might end up being a lot sicker than if you were triple vaxxed in February and you were exposed in May or July, June. Okay? So it's about the timing of the third vaccination. It's also about the immune response that you've mounted to your vaccinations. And for some people, we do know that everyone's immune system behaves very differently to vaccines. And we've known this for always and with every vaccine. So it's not, this is not unique to the COVID vaccinations. And in fact, if we compare the vaccine efficacy of the COVID vaccinations, it's much greater than it has been for a lot of the other vaccines that have that we have and which we rely on and have confidence in, for all for good reason, because when you vaccinate a large portion of the community, you protect the community. And so with COVID, it depends also on whether or not they received a really huge viral load. So sometimes you might have just been exposed to a very small viral load, but if you had exposure to a very large viral load, then that will also impact how effective that is in cheating your immune system. And the other one is also about amount of, you know, how much stress you are also under yourself, your own factors at the time. If you just come back from, you know, a series of night shifts and you haven't slept well and your own capacity to fight things has been reduced, then that will also render you vulnerable.
So we're going back to that kind of holistic environmental scenario. As a nation, we're 95 or something percent double vaxxed. People are starting to naturally want to live and live the life they had or close enough to the life they had before. They're travelling. In your view, where do you see us in – where do you see COVID and where do you see us as a vaxxed people? I mean, we are safer, are we not?
Yes and no. So we are safer with respect to Delta, which we now are not seeing much of at all. And we are safer with respect to the current variants of Omicron. But that does not render us safe against subsequent variants. So what we know is that the coronavirus is still undergoing its changes and that there are other variants that we need to be mindful of. And as we're seeing spikes in the incidence of disease and deaths from disease nationally, we'd need to take that on board and say, look, as a nation, as a global community, we are going through this phase together. It's not really about the me and I want to live the way I want to live. It's about the we and how can we take this responsibility whilst also having a quality life at the same time. And that, to a large extent, still requires us to wear masks in certain situations. And the most obvious ones are public transport and where you're in a closed cabin or in a closed environment with a bunch of other people and you don't quite know what their immune system is like. So now if, let's say, for instance, yourself, you've just had COVID, you feel fairly protected and you're very right to feel very protected. For the next 6 weeks to 3 months, you actually are pretty well covered, even from any other variants of COVID. You might be exposed, but the likelihood that you'll succumb very badly to one of them is very slim. It actually is. So you've got circulating antibody, which will more than likely give you some protection.
Which goes to the other element. Are we going to be having COVID vaccinations on a regular basis? Is it like the flu vax or other vaxes? Is it an annual thing? Or do you see it as a, you know, the 3 to 4 shots and that's it? How do you see it?
Oh, I don't think it's going to be 3 to 4 shots. I think it's going to be an annual thing. I think we knew that from the outset. I didn't think that I don't think the epidemiologists were ever saying that we'll never need to have coronavirus. We'll probably be having the Fluorona vaccination. And that may well be. Now that we know that we can have the flu vaccine alongside the COVID vaccine at the same time, that's a really positive thing. You know, this is the way the world is. I think it's been a really exciting phase, really, from a scientific perspective. You know, for the first time, the whole world has elevated in its health literacy. We understand things about aerosol spread. We understand the importance of, you know, washing hands and washing surfaces. We understand the importance of wearing a mask and how that contains all that breath that contains live virus. We understand more about weak and strong immune systems, whether or not we know what that means. We have a better understanding now of all these things, and this is internationally at every level. So I think from, you know, let's look at the positives, and the positives are that we understand more about our social responsibility also, that it's not just about you looking after your own health. When you're looking after your health, you're looking after everybody else's health, and that's a really important message. And yes, this is part of where we are now. This is the new viral
society.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yuval Harari talks the new viral age.
Yeah.
Let me take you to medications. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about medications, CD24 and others. In fact, the Israelis and the Greeks were working on some interesting stuff, and others have. Do you see medications or new medications coming in to limit the effects of COVID symptoms or the expansion of COVID when somebody gets sick?
Absolutely. It's always been on the table. It's always been on the agenda. And the key with the antivirals is, number one, they need to have a very low side effect profile. Number two, the timing of the administration is also really important, because if you miss that window of opportunity, the same existed for Tamiflu with influenza. You know, you've got to use it. You've got to administer it within, you know, for the flu, you've got to administer it within the first 24 hours. You know, with the coronavirus, with a lot of the antivirals, you've got to administer it within the first 4 to 5 days. And if you don't know you've got the disease, then that's going to you're going to miss that window. So there are issues around the medication, how affordable they are to produce. So when these are developed, of course, as you understand, you know, the pharmaceutical industry invests billions in these developments, and to actually market them with safety is a whole other discussion. It needs to be targeted for the right reasons. So antivirals have always been on the agenda. They will be part of that spectrum. They currently are for the immunocompromised and people who are hospitalised. Yeah.
Thank you. Look, last question or last discussion point. We started off with a view that there are a group of Greek Australians, and as we said before, and we know their community, that are sceptical or anti-vax and a whole range of other issues. Whatever you and I say, whatever we say, it's very rare to change these people's position. So how do we deal with that? What do we do about that? We do nothing, or we just allow people to be – I mean, there's not much you can do about that, is there?
Well, there isn't that much you can do, but – by the same token, I think they've become a lot less vocal, because more of the community has been vaccinated. And as a consequence of that, that was the whole aim. We've always had anti-vaxxers in our communities and in our societies. And I think that, you know, whether they're informed or not, well-informed or not, that's something we need to accept as part of the human spectrum with respect. And I think that the argument now for protecting the community has made it very evident that we are not seeing as many deaths as we would have otherwise. When you see statistically the numbers of COVID positive people in the community and compare that to the number of deaths that we're actually witnessing, that speaks for itself. Vaccinating the community works. It protects everyone.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Magdalena. Before we close off, I'd like to give you the opportunity. What is it that you'd like to tell the Australian Greek community about COVID, about health? What is it that, what's the takeout message you want them to take with after this program?
The first one is to really visit your GP if you have any health issues. And that can be an array of mental health issues, physical health issues. Make sure you're up to date with all your screens. If you have doubts about the vaccine, have a conversation with your GP, get the latest information. I think we've got a lot more evidence now to support the importance of vaccination on a community level, because we're seeing fewer deaths, and with the rate of disease that we see in the community, that speaks for itself. From a community perspective, I think that what we've all learned is that we're all on a learning curve, and that no one has perfect answers to this, and that even the scientific world has been inching its way towards a clearer truth. And we've been pretty much on the mark with respect to aerosol spread and the importance of wearing masks. So when in doubt, wear a mask.
Fantastic. Well, there is the clearer truth, as you put it, I think, and we have come to a conclusion that there is a clearer truth that we can all follow. Thank you so much, Dr. Magdalena Soanis, for coming onto the program.
My pleasure.